From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm Ross Reynolds. If asked, are you a racist? Most people would say no to that and many other biases. But UW psychologist Tony Greenwald has developed a test he says can reveal underlying bias. He's co-written a new book called Blind Spot, Hidden Biases of Good People. Tony is an elected member of the American Academy of Arts and Science and the recipient of the Distinguished Scientist Award from the Society of Experimental Social Psychology. And the focus of his work at UW is unconscious cognition, prejudice, stereotype, attitudes, and attitude change. Tony, thank you so much for coming by.
Thank you, Ross. I'm glad to be here.
Why is the subtitle of Blind Spot Hidden Biases of Good People?
We are interested in picking on not the usual targets when it comes to talking about bias. It might be easiest to pick on conservatives and chauvinists. I'd like to pick on liberals and feminists. And it's for people in those categories who most feel that they are operating as society's spearhead against bias. For them to spot what's in their own heads that may be functioning as a bias, that's in part what our book is about.
You write that we rarely or believe we rarely or never give answers that are untrue, but that's untrue. How do you know?
We write this in a portion of the book that has to do with the vicissitudes of using question-asking methods in research, and we try to get away from question-asking methods. But it's sort of a cute chapter in the book, early in the book, where we just explain the great number of situations in which people, for a wide variety of reasons, will deviate from giving responses that they know are true, including what they tell their doctor, what they report is their height, weight, and age in response to questionnaires. Not everyone does it, but surprisingly, many do.
Now, is it one of the examples you give, if you ask if someone's fine, usually they say they are, even when they're not?
Yes, I do this all the time. I trust you do. It just means you're a normal person, but it doesn't. The fact is, you might be thinking at the moment of something that's hurting you or a difficulty you're having at work or at home, and that just doesn't enter into the answer. Fine is the answer.
Is that a lie, though? I mean, if you say I'm fine, but I look at you and I go, boy, he looks really unhappy today. His brow is knit. Is there not kind of an understanding that that's a social nicety to say I'm fine rather than truth?
Yes. And that's the most harmless kind of lie. We call that and some other lies, white lies, which are not really meant to provoke any serious deception. We do get on into other ones when people report, for example, how much they drink or smoke. They're likely to give answers that are too low.
You know, I've heard of something called an optimism bias, the idea that when asked what our chances are of getting cancer, we inevitably underestimate that we have a bias towards being optimistic about things. Have you uncovered that in your research?
Well, there are many, many biases that psychology works at, and that's not the category we're focusing on. We focus on things that more affect social interactions. Optimism bias might have to do with how well you think things are going to turn out in the next weeks, months, etc. We focus on biases that take the form of deviation from what you believe about yourself. So many believe that they're totally rational, don't think that they will do anything thoughtlessly, irrationally, but they operate irrationally all the time. Not too long ago, Daniel Kahneman, the Nobel Prize-winning psychologist—
Who sat right there.
Who sat right here and whom I know well, came through and talked about thinking fast and thinking slow. And that's he emphasizes how often we think fast, which really means we probably don't think at all, but just give the answer that's at the top of the head.
Now, you mentioned you don't want this work just to be taken as a critique of conservatives, but you say that there are a lot of blind spots among people who might consider themselves to be liberal or feminists or otherwise. Give us an example.
Yeah. So in political debate, I include myself in most of the biases I'll talk about. I don't know about you personally, but we generally respond to the speaker and our known identification of the speaker as liberal or conservative as the primary basis for deciding whether we agree with what he or she says. So in the healthcare debate, when the Republicans proposed an individual mandate, Democrats were rejecting it. But Barack Obama comes along and proposes the individual mandate, and both sides switch sides in liking for that. Now, that's a pretty thoughtless thing, because if you were rational at one time, you weren't rational at the other. It reminds me of a scene that really impressed me when I was reading 1984, Orwell's novel, as a kid. And in a mass rally within the space of a minute or less, the enemy switches from being East Asia to Eurasia, or maybe it was the reverse. It doesn't matter. The idea is that this was an example of the way in political domains we may operate pretty thoughtlessly, depending on who the speaker is and what the speaker says.
If we're aware that we have a tendency to disbelieve someone if we disagree with their political perspective, in your example, that person's conservative, I don't believe anything they're going to say. If we're aware of that, does that enable us to overcome that bias?
It helps. And one of our messages in the book is that just being aware of the extent to which our minds operate unthinkingly is going to be useful, because we can catch ourselves. For example, I've learned, and this is a different case, but I've learned not to trust my memory, because I've read so much research that tells me how inadequate memory is. So whenever, especially when I'm debating with my wife about how we recollect anything, whenever I draw on my memory and say, you know, this is the way it happened, I will always qualify that. I say, I might be wrong, though.
I'm talking with Tony Greenwald. You may have read about his research. It's been out there for some time. He's a psychologist at the University of Washington. And one of the things he's done in this book, Blind Spot, Hidden Biases of Good People, is go back to look at his own research. And you have developed, this is where I first became aware of it, it caused quite a sensation. You have actually a way to measure attitudes that you think gets to that deeper level. It's called the Implicit Association Test. Could you briefly explain how it works?
Yes. It's based on a very simple psychological principle. We call the implicit association test the IAT for short. It's the assumption, the theory, is that if two things are related, members of two categories are related, it's easier to give the same response to them. So in the IAT, and this is true, and we have several in the book, and there are ones on the web one can take, we show a series of words or images, and the first one in the book involves flowers, insects, pleasant words, unpleasant words. And the instruction is to give the same response with a computer key or checking with a pencil when you see a flower word or a pleasant word. Turns out that's easy. Then we give it with a different instruction. Okay, now the same series of four types of words is going to come up, but when you see an insect word and a pleasant word, you have to give the same response. That turns out to be more difficult, goes more slowly, and the comparison of those two types of tasks gives us a measure from the difference of speed, tells us the strength of the association of flowers with pleasant in this case. Now, when we did this with the race attitude test, we just changed the flowers and the insects into black faces and white faces. Otherwise, the task is the same.
And so what about a result on that test would tell you about someone's attitude towards someone of another race?
Well, I'll tell you my result. When I first tried this on myself, I think it was in 1994 or 95, I was amazingly slow when I was had to give the same response to famous African American names and pleasant words. Compared to famous white American names and pleasant words, I went much faster. I had no expectation that was going to happen. I spent several years, I and others, trying to figure out what that meant. Did it mean something that had to do with our social behavior? Eventually, after a decade or so of various people doing research on it, we convinced ourselves that, yes, it did have something to do with it. And it's something that affects liberals and feminists as much as conservatives and chauvinists.
So there's an internal logic to the implicit association test, but have you been able to compare that to other measures of attitude to confirm that your results are indeed accurate?
We don't have another measure that's an indirect measure like the IAT is that works as well. So it's difficult to get a comparison to another measure like that. But we do have lots of standard what's called self-report or survey measures of race attitudes. And we do, and there have been lots of studies done in which those are compared with the IAT. We generally find a correlation, but the interesting thing is that the correlation is not large, which tells us they are not measuring the same thing. And whereas the survey questions, the self-report measures show relatively low levels of bias, racial bias in particular, maybe 10-15% of the population, the IAT shows that there's what we call an automatic preference for white among about 75% of the population, including about that proportion of whites and Asians, a little less of Hispanics. Blacks are African Americans are quite different.
So how do we know that your results are the correct ones and the others might be not correct?
We don't. And we don't even say that one is the right measure and the other is not. The IAT measures something different. Both types of measures measure something that affects behavior. And the interesting thing is how they differ. The IAT, it was not a foregone conclusion after we developed the IAT that it was going to prove to predict behavior. It took 10 years or so of research to establish that. But it does not correlate well with the self-report measures. It does predict behavior, so do self-report measures.
Does it predict behavior outside the realm of the test? In other words, if the test suggests that someone has a racial bias or a bias against conservatives, can we predict that they will behave in a biased way towards those two entities?
What we think is likely is to think of what the test measures probably as an in-group preference in the case of the race test, meaning that if we're in a situation where we can help someone, if that person is white, we're more likely to help that person than if that person is black. And there's actually been a lot of research done in just such helping situations showing that that's true. There hasn't been a lot of research done correlating with that with the IAT, which would be interesting. We expect we would observe a correlation. But it's this differential disposition to help that is probably more important than differential dispositions to harm.
Tony Greenwald is my guest. You may have heard about his research. It's been widely reported over the years, and it's kind of summarized and brought together in a new book called Blind Spot, The Hidden Biases of Good People. If you just tuned in, he's been telling us about the implicit association test that he's been administering way back since 1998, and he says that it can actually kind of get beneath the hood of your what you think you believe and what you think you know and get to a deeper level of that. Maybe you've got a question for him. We're at 206-543-5869. That's 206-543-KUOW. It's toll-free 800-289-5869. Or write to us, conversation@KUOW.org. Let's go to Anthony. I want to hear what some people who are listening to this have to say to what we've been hearing from Tony. Anthony's with us today in Maple Valley. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, hello. thank you. It's a very relevant topic for me because I have a belief that our society really doesn't encourage people to be very introspective about themselves. And I think a lot of people are not trying to be deceptive, but they may believe something in an abstraction. But when they're confronted with the reality, their reaction may be even surprising to themselves. And kind of the example I use with people is you may say, well, you know, I believe in gay rights. I'm not against gay people. But when your 16-year-old son comes home with his boyfriend, you may find you're feeling slightly different. Or with a daughter that comes home with, you know, an African-American boyfriend and your family is white, and your reaction, you know, could possibly be different from what you believed about yourself.
That's a really interesting point, Anthony, how a real-life situation might reveal this. Tony, would we assume that if someone took the implicit association test and it showed that they were biased against gay people, that they would experience that surprise that Anthony just described to us?
If they did not have previous experience interacting with a gay person, they might well be surprised on that. Sociologists call the interaction that we have through media what we know is what we see on television, here on the radio, etc. they call that symbolic interaction, and it's different from face-to-face interaction. So when we get to the face-to-face interaction, very often we can be surprised because the determinants of our behavior can be different.
Pat wrote to us at conversation@kuow.org. He wants to know if you have run the test on successive classes at the university, and if so, have you seen a difference in results from students over time? For example, on the gay rights issue, which we know in public opinion polls, there's been a big shift in that.
So this is a very interesting question, and in fact, there are tests that we have been using for over a decade. The race test shows little shift over time, which is a bit disappointing to some people because the typical response on it is this automatic white preference, which is fairly strong. The gay-straight test is giving some indications of change. And I would agree with many observers who say that this is an area in which the content of our media is changing, and this is probably having influences on these associations that we carry around in our heads and that are measured by the IAT.
One of the things you mentioned, and critics point this out, you said that sometimes a pause or a delay in making an answer, and you referred to it yourself when it came to famous black figures from history, indicated a difficulty in mental operations. Now, some critics say that some things just take longer because you're unfamiliar with it. So interpreting the delay as something negative is not a good way to look at it.
That particular criticism comes from those who haven't actually looked at the scientific literature on it, because it was actually one of the first concerns that was raised. We raised it ourselves back before 2000 and immediately did a number of experiments and showed that actually familiarity with the items that are used in the test was not a factor at all. A little surprising. We thought it might be, but it wasn't.
Tony Greenwald, thank you so much for stopping by and talking to us about this. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Ross. Thanks for being interested.
Tony Greenwald is a psychologist at the University of Washington. His new book that he's co-written is called Blind Spot: Hidden Biases of Good People. David Hyde produces our show with Arwen Nix. We get production help from Cameron Drews. Rob Wood is in control. From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm Ross Reynolds.